the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders notch primary wins. Donald Trump unveils his potential Supreme Court justice picks. And a list of Trump's potential VP picks is leaked. More faculty members express no confidence in UW System President Ray Cross. We will discuss all of these issues and more during this edition of The Week in Review. Our guests will discuss these issues and other top national and state political stories, and we welcome your input, too. What happened in the news this week that you want to discuss? What do you think is the most important issue in the news this week? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Joining us today, Kevin Hermaning. Kevin is a financial planner and a political activist. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy, and look forward to our conversation with Christine.
Yes, I do too. Christine Bremer-Moogley is our other guest. She's an attorney with Bremer and Trollop Law Offices in Wausau, a representative to the Democratic National Committee, and a member of the Electoral College in 2008 and 2012. She was named the authorized representative of the Hillary Clinton presidential campaign in Wisconsin. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning. I'm in Madison, and I thought I'd be with you today, Joy, but I'm here in my beautiful hotel room looking at a gorgeous blue sky, so I'm happy.
I'm so sorry that I am, of all days, one of the few days ever I'm not in Madison. I'm in Green Bay at the UW Green Bay campus at our Green Bay Bureau because of a listener event that we had here last night, which was fabulous, by the way. And I know that we're planning on doing some sort of special event in Wausau in October, I believe. It's not completely set in stone, but when that happens, I hope that both you and Kevin will join me in the Wausau studios.
Hey, Kevin, that's a date.
Look forward to it.
Yeah, good. Okay. All right, so more on that another time. Well, let's talk about the latest in the presidential race. Let's start on the Democratic side. Hillary Clinton squeaked by Bernie Sanders in Kentucky by just a half a percentage point, and Sanders took Oregon. Clinton maintains her lead in terms of delegates and is expected to clinch the nomination after voters in California and New Jersey weigh in on June 7th. Christine, you are the Hillary Clinton supporter in the room. How are you feeling about where her campaign is right now?
Well, in terms of where she is from the people who have spoken in this primary race, she has 3 million more votes than Bernie Sanders, more than 2 million more votes than Donald Trump, and has a delegate lead of 260 pledged delegates, not to count the superdelegates yet. And so I think if I were Hillary Clinton, I would be pretty happy about where I stand right now. I mean, you have to be concerned about the future and how the race will go, but how could it be much better? She's in a much better position today than Obama was in 2008. So I think Hillary Clinton is feeling good and ready to rock and roll against Trump.
Do you have, Christine, any concerns that Bernie Sanders is staying in it until the convention, until the end?
Well, I think that everyone feels that's Bernie's personal decision. And, you know, I think when he decides he's ready to end this, he will. I think he feels that he wants all the voters to speak, and he's going to go through till the convention. I mean, I was there in 2008 and sitting as a delegate on the floor of the convention when Hillary Clinton came up and asked us to acclaim Barack Obama as the nominee. So, you know, this isn't new to us. This is how the Democratic Party operates. We're an open party. And Bernie Sanders has a lot of supporters, and they want to have their voices heard. And at the convention, they will, and so will he. But the majority wins, and the majority will be Hillary Clinton.
So, Kevin, what's your take looking at the Democratic side?
Well, you know, she's a very strong candidate, both in the primary as well as in the general election. There's no doubt about it. The Clinton machine has been strong for, golly, 30 years nearly, going back to the days in Arkansas. There's a front-page article in USA Today way back on May 7th, 2008. So, you know, 8 years ago, almost to the day. And Hillary Clinton had just lent her campaign about $6.5 million at that time. She was trailing the current president, well, now President Barack Obama at the time. But, you know, Barack Obama was the front runner, but she pledged to stay in the race until every last vote was counted. And it's mm-hmm. interesting. It's almost the exact same language that Senator Sanders is using. And he feels strongly that every voter in the nation should have the opportunity to cast their ballot in a competitive, contested race. So, you know, it makes sense for him to stay in the race. Unity is, of course, the buzzword in both campaigns. We're going to talk about the Republican one in a few minutes, I'm sure.
Yes.
But, you know, Hillary Clinton is, she is being defined by the presumptive nominee on the Republican side, Donald Trump. And anytime you can't get into the race at the same time, it tends to at least set the campaign back a little bit. So they're preparing, of course, for the race against Donald Trump. They're already speaking about him. Their surrogates are certainly ramping up on an ongoing, everyday basis. You know, the problem for Hillary Clinton right now is that she can't win. She's not winning every race. And she, even the ones she wins, like in Kentucky, you know, if once all the votes are in, it may be even closer than the less, fewer than 2,000 ballots or votes that were cast on that day once some of the other absentee ballots are counted. But nonetheless, I think Christine is right. 260 delegate lead before the superdelegates. The superdelegates are largely not going to switch, and Hillary Clinton will be the nominee.
So well, I just wanted to add, if I could, Joy, mm-hmm. Hillary said, and we have to remember this, in 2008, Obama won 3 of the last 10 primaries. Hillary's won 7 of the last 11. And after she dropped out, you know, when we talk about how Bernie, it's Bernie or bust, and or Bernie or Trump, or however you want to say it, 47% of Hillary supporters in 2008, in August, after the convention, said they will never vote for Obama. And look what happened. And in the polls right now show there's only 10% of Bernie Sanders people saying such things. So I think that it's something that we expect. People feel strongly about this race, and that's good. But we will come together in the end.
Let's talk some, Christine, about that ruckus in Nevada at the convention there last week. And the Sanders campaign accused DNC leaders of bias against him, while many Democrats urged Sanders to keep his supporters in check. Sanders supporters yelled and apparently threatened convention leaders and even lifted up a chair as though they were going to throw it. Sanders has condemned the violence. Christine, how do you think Sanders and the DNC should be handling this?
Well, you know, for me personally, it was extremely upsetting. Barbara Boxer is one of my heroes. I'm sure she's not yours, Kevin, but she's one of mine. And the way they treated her, the people at the convention, there was no reason for that. There was no ever any reason for someone to threaten violence against the state party chair as they did, as these Bernie Sanders supporters did, or go on, you know, social media and post her personal information and threaten her children. So how can you ever say that that's right? It was horrible. And I think Debbie Wasserman Schultz called it out and said, we do not condone this. We will never condone this. If you disagree with the party rules, then do something about the party rules. But the problem was the rules were being followed, and the supporters didn't understand the rules. And so there were problems, and they didn't have good communication. And I hope that between the DNC to make certain that people understand the rules, which are the rules that have been in effect for decades, and the Sanders supporters who are coming into this and learning the rules, that we can come together and understand that this is a process that has to work for all of us. And we can never, ever, ever have that kind of violence. You know, we're going to have our own convention in Green Bay, and it will be the people in Wisconsin just don't act that way. And so we will have a unified convention, and we will have our disagreements, but we will do that with respect.
What do you think of what happened in Nevada, Kevin?
Well, you know, Nevada has a history of political shenanigans. I don't really hate to keep going back to 2008, but Hillary Clinton won Nevada in 2008, although barely. Interestingly enough, Barack Obama won 13 of the 25 pledged delegates, despite the fact that Hillary Clinton won. And that's because Barack Obama won in the more rural parts of the state. So there is a lot of confusion about the electoral process, the primary process. I've always said for 30 years now that being involved in campaigns myself, both as a candidate as well as supporting a number of them, being the regional spokesman for the last two presidential campaigns, asked to do so by the candidate representatives themselves. The primaries are for party members to select the person they want to go up in the general election. And I understand the independents, the people who do not choose to get involved in the political process during the non-election years, meaning essentially not voting or except for voting, and their disappointment in not being allowed to get involved in the process. Obviously, in Wisconsin, we have more of an open primary. You can choose whoever you want. You don't register by party in our state. And so, but nonetheless, the parties themselves are typically the individuals who are engaged in putting forth their candidate of choice to the voters and among those who compete for it. And that's why it's so important for the candidates to get out on the stump, to go to the Lincoln Day dinners on the Republican side, to shake hands at the county fairs, to go, you know, glad-handing down the streets of Main Street of rural America and the big cities and meet the people so that the people themselves can get to know the candidates at least a little bit, eye-to-eye, look them eye-to-eye and ask them important questions of public policy.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin Hermaning and Christine Bremer-Moogley. And we'll take a call next. Doug in Lancaster joins us. Hi, Doug. You're on the air.
Hi there. Yeah, I'm calling just to say with regards to independence, I am an independent voter, and I do vote in almost every election that's out there. But with regards to this specific presidential election, I am a Bernie supporter, and I have been since he announced his campaign. And I just wanted to say, folks like me who are not Democrats don't really want to see Hillary Clinton get the nomination. I understand the policies. I understand how conventions and committees work. But regardless of how all that works, my support is not for Hillary Clinton, and I'm going to choose to vote for third party, regardless of whether or not Bernie Sanders chooses to say I support the candidate. I think that's where the problem is going to lie, and I think people are underestimating how close this election is going to be because the choices are so unfavorable this year.
Yeah, and Doug, you don't care if that means Donald Trump wins.
Unfortunately, I don't. Sometimes you have to say, you know, burn the whole thing down to fix it, and unfortunately, that seems to be this moment.
Christine?
That's the really ridiculous. I'm sorry, Doug, I just don't agree with that at all. You don't say burn the whole thing down because that doesn't work. You know, we've done that in the past. You know, people talk about the election with Gore and Bush. You know, that was a disaster from the Democratic side. And we just can't afford that. Donald Trump is an unpredictable, dangerous candidate. And if you look at the positions of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, if you truly are a student of politics and look at their actual positions, they are very, very close. There is nothing close about Donald Trump's positions and Hillary Clinton's positions. So those people who say it's Bernie or bust, or it's really Bernie or Trump, and you have to take responsibility for that. So, you know, people that tell me that they're going to, that they've never voted before. I have people contacting me saying they've never voted before in their lives. But they're voting for Bernie, and that's why everybody should be for Bernie, because people that have never voted before are now coming for Bernie. That doesn't have any credibility to me. You know, I think if you really care about your nation and care about your communities, you should vote. You know, that means that Democrats or independents who claim to be progressive sat out when Walker was elected. Now, that did us a lot of good. So from my perspective, I just say that this is not what Doug said, is something that I just absolutely disagree with.
Let me ask Kevin, are you hoping that conservatives find a third party or independent alternative to Donald Trump?
Absolutely not. The Republicans and the independents who chose to vote Republican in the primaries selected Donald Trump to be the nominee this year. And there is not going to be a credible third-party candidate. The financing simply won't be there. The Never Trump people, I respect a lot of them. I respect all of them. I understand and share some of the disappointment on some of the philosophical issues of important public policy that have certainly been out there for a number of years, decades, in fact, 40-some years, 80 years in some cases. But Donald Trump is very close on nearly every political issue of importance to the world and to our United States these days. And so I do not think there will be a third party. Christine and I agree on one thing here, maybe not the outcome as far as obviously not the outcome as far as the Gore Bush campaign of 2000. But the truth of the matter is that there really is no excuse as a citizen of this country that you would not be fully engaged in the political process from the moment you are able to vote, maybe even prior to that as a teenager. There's no excuse. There are people standing in harm's way right now to give you that opportunity, speaking to this independent. And I would say that to anybody who chooses to sit out any political campaign.
We'll take a short pause, and when we come back, we'll take some more calls from listeners who want to weigh in on the national politics of the week. We'll also talk a little bit about Hillary Clinton this week, saying that Bill Clinton would have a lot to say in her administration when it comes to the economy. And we welcome other issues that you want to discuss at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guests this week are Kevin Hermaning, financial planner, political activist, and Christine Bremer-Moogley, an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in state and national politics. Today's Week in Review guests are Kevin Hermaning and Christine Bremer-Moogley. We welcome your input, too. If you have an issue from the news this week that you would like us to discuss, call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Back to the phones we go, and Sheree in Waupun is with us next. Hi, Sheree, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much to your guests for joining us this morning. I wanted to say two different things. Number one, I like Bernie as far as some of his policies. I will say up front, I'm a Hillary supporter. However, I'm a little aggravated with Bernie in the sense that I've been a Democrat since I registered to vote when I was 17 and a half. And I feel like I feel like he's our Donald Trump to a certain degree. He's not saying divisive things, well, sort of, kind of. But I have a bigger problem with the fact that he's not helping other Democrats down ticket. He caucuses with the Democrats, but we have to remember he was always elected as an independent. So in my mind, he's like our Donald Trump, where he came into the fold when he needed us, and now he's not helping people down ticket. And I don't really feel that's being good to my party. If you're asking me for my support as a Democrat, then I expect his support as a Democrat, and I expect him to support the Democrats down ticket. And that's where I'm having a bigger issue. And as far as Donald Trump goes, I have to say, I wish Hillary would just say, look, I was the woman that was cheated on. No, my marriage isn't perfect. However, we worked through our marriage, and we made a marriage that worked for us. I'm proud of my family. I'm proud of what we accomplished. And I'm sorry, Donald, that you couldn't keep your marriage vows and your goals and your financial statements. But personally, I'm proud of the fact that I worked my marriage out. I really wish you would just say that and put this to bed, because otherwise he's just going to continue to use it as a weapon.
Sheree, well, what do you think? Should she say that, Christine?
Well, first of all, I think you should have Sheree as one of your guests.
Right.
She's fantastic. But I think that Sheree, you voice something that many, many women think. You know, we might have all of us that lived through that horrible episode in the 90s remember how hard it was for Hillary, and anybody that's gone through a divorce understands the pain of divorce, and that if you make a decision to stay with someone who's been unfaithful, that is a decision that is well thought and it's personal, and they and she should not have to be punished for that. I agree with you 100%, and I think there wouldn't be anything wrong with her just saying that, because a lot of women in this country would say, damn right, Hillary. So I agree with you 100%. The thing about Bernie also that you said is something that I have heard and I've read in many of the comments. You know, the Democratic Party, even though, you know, it gets declared to be corrupt and moribund and not letting people in, this is just not true. And I think that when people that have not been members of the Democratic Party and don't understand, you know, the rules, as Kevin, as you said, it's a private political organization with rules. And if you don't understand the rules and you've never played by the rules, and then you come into the party because we let you in and you start criticizing the rules, it's kind of hard for all of us Democrats to take. And so, you know, we want inclusiveness. We think that what Bernie Sanders has done with regard to opening people's minds and hearts to coming into the political process is great, even though, as you and I agree, that people should vote through their lives. But there are many people that don't. We know that. So Bernie's bringing these people forward. That's great. But you can't come into our party and then say it's terrible. One other thing that's really important, and Sheree, this is something that all people need to understand. There is a victory fund that allows candidates to bring in money to the states where they raise money. They also bring in money so that down ticket people who are running for office down ticket can benefit from all the money, the millions of dollars that are being raised by a campaign. Senator Sanders has raised millions and millions of dollars. Everyone knows that he's been extremely successful with his $27 donations. And yet we haven't seen any money come into the Democratic Party in the state of Wisconsin, for sure, from Senator Sanders to help down-ticket candidates who are, you know, Bernieites, that people that believe in his thing. And he's not bringing in money. On the other hand, Hillary Clinton has brought in millions of dollars to the state of Wisconsin through her campaign funds. So, you know, we think that's really important, and it says something a lot when a candidate doesn't help down ticket. And so, you know, people have to be aware of that. This is really, really something that we Democrats have to be aware of and what's really going on here.
Kevin, how about the issue of Donald Trump bringing up Hillary Clinton enabling Bill Clinton's infidelities and that issue? Is that a mistake?
Well, I think if I were to give my description of what he's talking about, he's been going after the idea that Hillary Clinton talks out of both sides of her mouth on this issue. Number one, she talks about being supportive of women's rights and the role of women in our society, which is extremely valuable and important. And I have two strong daughters and a strong wife, and I want to encourage them to do anything that they can do to advance their own lives, their careers, and their relationships. That having been said, Hillary Clinton also went after the very people who had accused the president at the time of, and even prior to that, of infidelity and of a number of other things of even graver nature. This week, the president actually, I should say Donald Trump actually accused the president, President Clinton, of having raped her, and or a woman having raped her. And so these are issues that, you know, we don't need to be reliving the 1990s. I think it becomes an issue of character. Clearly, people on the Democrat side believe that Hillary Clinton is not the woman of the type of character they want in the White House. Certainly, a lot of Republicans feel that way about her. A lot of Republicans feel that way about Donald Trump. You know, you live in a glass house, eventually the glass gets broken, and so you have to be careful of what's out there. And we all have our skeletons. We all have things we prefer not to talk about in public, and that's why a lot of people choose not to run for public office. And, you know, I just think that we need to get to a real discussion of the important issues of national security and economic security and personal liberty. And eventually we're going to get to those issues, I hope and trust, before November.
Let me, briefly,
yes. Respond very quickly? First of all, Kevin, I really, really don't appreciate you repeating allegations about rape that have never been substantiated, and I don't think we should even talk about that. Secondly, 69% of the women in this country have a negative impression of Donald Trump. And, you know, if you're going to come out and say that a woman whose husband has an affair on her publicly isn't going to have some bad feelings about the woman he had an affair with, you're crazy. And so if Hillary made a comment at some point about some of the women that might have claimed that her husband was having affairs with her, I guess that's kind of natural, as Sheree would say. And women just don't appreciate when men make these comments. So I think we should stay away from that. And I agree with Sheree. Hillary should come out and just say what it is.
Hillary Clinton said earlier this week that if elected, she would put Bill Clinton to work on the nation's economy. She didn't give any specifics as to what she meant, but she praised his efforts to bring the economy back in the 1990s. So, Kevin, what do you make of the possibility of Bill Clinton helping to run the economy again?
Well, Bill Clinton happened to be president of the United States during the time of the Republican Revolution in the House of Representatives, the first time that the Republicans gained the majority in the House in over 40 years. And so President Clinton benefited from the mutual respect that occurred in working on important issues of economic recovery. But really, the recession of 1990 was not really that bad. We had a boom time in the 1980s. Ronald Reagan benefited from coming out of the recession of 1979 to 81. And the recession occurred during the presidential election. And that's what happened in 1992. And that's why the White House swung. But it also swung because the American people typically switch parties in charge after 12 years. And so Bill Clinton was a benefactor of some really good times, particularly baby boomers moving into their biggest spending years of their lives. And spending by consumers and borrowing by consumers always helps a national economy, regardless of who's in the White House.
Christine?
I think you're right about, presidents benefit from the president's efforts in the term before them. Some of the things that Reagan benefited from started in the Carter administration. You know, Clinton benefited from some of the things in the Bush administration. I mean, we all remember NAFTA was actually signed by Bush. I guess he didn't benefit from that. But, you know, when we look at the record of Clinton, balanced budget, 22.7 million jobs, 77 million people came off the poverty rolls. You know, this was a time when things really kind of clicked. It was a time of economic success. So if she says, you know, he's going to have a role in her administration, every spouse, first ladies obviously in the past, have had an important role, and his important role is to help her come up with programs to help revitalize the economy and create jobs. And that's what she said. It's not a cabinet position. It's a position for him. You know, he'll be the first, I guess we call him, I don't know, what are we going to call him, Kevin? The first dude? I don't know what you call him.
I think that Hillary said first gentleman. What do you think of that?
First gentleman, yeah, that's cool. So, you know,
I'm not sure anyone would just, on my side,
all
would
right,
consider
all right.
Bill Clinton a gentleman.
So, you know, I think he's going to have a role, and I think that's a great place to put him.
Let's move on to Donald Trump's campaign is asking potential running mates to submit their tax returns as part of the vetting process. This comes as Trump has been under fire from a former GOP presidential nominee Mitt Romney and Hillary Clinton to publicly release his own tax returns. Trump said that he'll release those returns after an audit of his finances is complete. Kevin, how important is it to you that Donald Trump release his tax returns?
I don't care of any candidate's tax returns. It's become something of a tradition in the United States that candidates for higher office release their tax returns. But I really don't care. I don't care about any of their tax returns. I believe he's wealthy. I was in New York City last week, Saturday night, and I walked past the Trump Tower on my way to visiting my daughter. I believe that Mitt Romney was very wealthy. I believe that Bill and Hillary Clinton maybe weren't wealthy when they left Little Rock, but they are today. I don't really care.
We care, Christine.
Well, I care. Every president, every major party nominee since 1976 has released their tax returns. Hillary Clinton has 38 years of tax returns out there. The personal financial form that Donald Trump is saying, well, I gave that out. Well, he has to give that out. It's not like he did that voluntarily. That's required by law. So, you know, when you think about what he said in the past, this is just classic Trump. In 2011, he said he'll release his tax returns when Obama releases his birth certificate. And then in February of 15, he said he'd release his tax returns for sure. He guaranteed it if he run for president. And so last June, he said he'll release his tax return before the GOP debate. And then he comes up with this story about an audit that he can't release his tax returns because they're under audit. And so what happens, the IRS puts out a statement and said, well, that's not true. You can release your tax returns whenever you want to. So I think when a guy like when Mitt Romney says this is disqualifying, that's quite a statement. You know, is he not as rich as he said he is, or is he paying such a low tax rate he's going to be embarrassed by it? I mean, I agree. I don't like tax returns. We never use them in evidence in our cases in trial. They're not relevant. But in this case, they are, because you have to compare them to other presidents. And I think also what's really important is hold him to his word. He said he was going to release him, and he hasn't. This is the guy that you can't hold him to anything. I think he's extremely dangerous as a candidate.
Kevin.
Christine, let me ask you a question. You're an attorney. Are you suggesting that you would recommend that somebody, as an attorney now, not as a political activist, somebody is having their tax returns audited, would you recommend that they release them to the public?
Well, you know, I don't usually advise people who are running for president, but in my cases and in the bodily injury cases that I represent people on with victims of negligence, we don't release tax returns because they're not relevant. We look at documents that support evidence concerning losses. But that is
not
the point here.
You
can't compare, but you can't compare apples to oranges. This is presidency, 1976 to now. All candidates have released their tax returns, and now we get Trump, and he won't. Why? There's something cooking here. And as Mitt Romney said, it could be a time bomb.
And, Kevin, last word on this as we have to move on?
I would just say that whether they get released or not, if they get released, people don't understand, generally speaking. I'm a financial planner. I have not a lot of who I would describe as wealthy clients, but I have a few, and many or most of them own real estate, commercial real estate. Their tax returns would never give away the idea that they are as wealthy as they are because of the rules of depreciation and other such things that the Congress has put in place and presidents have signed for 90 years. As it relates to real estate ownership.
We'll stay on the Republican side, but the Wisconsin Republican Convention this past weekend, Republicans there made a point to largely sidestep Trump at the state GOP convention. Many would not call him by name. Governor Walker said Republicans are overwhelmingly united in Wisconsin behind Ron Johnson for Senate. But Congressman Sean Duffy, your congressman, Kevin and Christine from the 7th District, noted that the 7th District supported Trump and that Trump will make America great again. Kevin, any concerns about the amount of GOP support that Trump is getting in Wisconsin?
You know, I think there's still a lot of bruised feelings. I understand Charlie Sykes was strongly opposed to Donald Trump. Certainly Governor Walker was in the campaign. There's still a lot of bruised feelings, but in 1980, George H.W. Bush despised Ronald Reagan, thought he was a hick, having graduated from Eureka College, and unfit for the White House. And a couple of weeks later, Ronald Reagan, presumptive nominee, called George H.W. Bush and said, I'd like you to be my running mate. And George H.W. Bush cupped the phone, and he looked at his wife, Barbara, and said, Barbara, you're not going to believe it. I'm being asked to be the vice president. I can't stand this guy. And Vice President, or then eventually Vice President Bush's wife, the real leader there, Barbara Bush, looked at him and said, if you ever want to live in the White House, you better say yes. And eventually he became president himself. And so every one of these people, from Ted Cruz to John Kasich to Scott Walker to Marco Rubio, if they got the call, they would swallow their pride and they would step up and serve their country.
I think it's hysterical when you think about how do people actually understand the Republican candidates. We've got Cruz calling him a pathological liar, Rubio calling him a con man, and other things. You know, they're all saying these horrific things about this guy, and we're supposed to just say, well, they didn't really mean it. He's fit to be president because he asked me to be his vice president. I agree. I think it's kind of ridiculous, and I think it's going to be a very easy call for the people of this country to say, look, this is not a joke.
Christine, I guess you forgot all the terrible things that Joe Biden, Senator Biden, said about Senator Barack Obama when he was running against him and eventually accepted or not on the ticket.
So he never called him a con.
This goes both ways. Yeah, he didn't use that exact language, but I would submit that he used some even more disparaging things that were quite racist at the time.
We don't have to
relive 8 years ago much longer today.
We are going to take a break because we still need to get to a number of national issues and state issues as our Week in Review continues. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Christine Bremer-Moogley, an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau, a representative to the Democratic National Committee, and Kevin Hermaning, a financial planner and a political activist. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org if you'd like to join in. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, broadcasting from the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, our WPR studios here in Green Bay, following a listener event last night. Thanks to all who turned out for our listener appreciation event at the Titletown Brewing Company in Green Bay. We had a marvelous time talking about the news of the week this hour with Kevin Hermaning and Christine Bremer-Moogley. And we also welcome the story from the news this week that you want us to discuss at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Let's see, still a lot to talk about. A former state Supreme Court justice is on Trump's shortlist of people that he would consider nominating to the U.S. Supreme Court. Diane Sykes left the Wisconsin Supreme Court in 2004 after she was nominated to the Federal Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago by President George W. Bush. Christine, what do you think of a potential Justice Sykes?
Well, I think it's funny that Charlie Sykes, her ex-husband, who is the leader of the Never Trump movement, said, "I don't believe it." I think that what we have to say is Diane Sykes is a brilliant jurist, and she is well recommended and received and honored by all lawyers that practice in front of her. So nothing to disparage her. She's probably the best name on the list. We note that they're all white people. 8 of 11 are men. We've got one clerk for Scalia, 3 clerks for Justice Thomas on this list, and the list came from probably the Heritage Foundation list or the list that's published by the Federalist Society. These people are extremely conservative other than Diane Sykes. So I would say that, and she is conservative, no doubt about that. But I think that it's a political ploy. I don't really understand why he'd do it. Even Reed Ribble, our Republican congressman from the 8th, said that he thought it was odd that he would publicize a list now when he's not even yet formally the candidate and he's not seriously elected. And others have said that it's presumptuous. Tammy Baldwin, of course, is saying, look, we've got Merrick Garland on the decks right now. Why don't the Republicans do their job and give him a hearing and get a vote? So, you know, that he would do this right now, I guess, is to give some comfort to the GOP that he's gonna pick one of these guys. But remember, Kevin, his statement doesn't say he's going to. It just suggests this is a possible list. So I don't think anybody should hang their hat on this. Everything he says, he always backs off, and then he says, well, I didn't really mean that. It was just a suggestion. So I think the same with this list. We love the fact that Diane Sykes is being recognized as one of ours from Wisconsin, but it would be terrible if he was just using her as a political ploy to get at Charlie Sykes.
What do you think of that, Kevin?
I don't think this has anything to do with Charlie Sykes. He had said that long before. Donald Trump, when asked as long ago as 4 years ago about his own potential candidacy, people always talk about Supreme Court nominees when they're thinking about potentially running for office, because it's one of the most important jobs, maybe second only to securing the national security of the U.S., of our country. It's a very important job, and it doesn't happen very much where people are actually going to have an opportunity to nominate somebody to the Supreme Court. And I understand Christine is disappointed that the Republicans are deciding to not hold hearings and move forward prospectively with putting Garland on the bench, but they're not required to do that. And Barack Obama and Joe Biden both in prior presidential campaigns suggested that it's not a requirement and it's not necessary during the heat of a political campaign, a presidential race. So, yes, Diane Sykes, whose name has been out there for years as a prospective Supreme Court nominee, ploy or not, it's getting people talking about it. And I absolutely do agree. It is designed in large measure to comfort conservatives who supported some of the more conventional candidates, some of the true conservative. There's no question that Donald Trump is not nearly as conservative as most of the other people who were running. He isn't. He wasn't. He never has been. And like Ronald Reagan, he had a vast, storied career, if you will, of taking positions that were not in line with political parties and eventually choosing to run as Republicans.
Republicans attending the Wisconsin Republican Party convention last weekend prefer to see Newt Gingrich or John Kasich as Donald Trump's running mate, according to a WisPolitics.com state straw poll. Kevin, who do you want to see as Trump's vice presidential running mate?
Newt Gingrich is one of my all-time heroes, political heroes. I think he would be an excellent vice president. He would have made a better president many years ago. And he was a great House Speaker, in my opinion, having brought about the revival of conservative principles and the way to talk about what you believe if you're in the conservative movement going back to the 1980s. I would say to you that Newt Gingrich has passed his prime. Of course, so is Joe Biden. But Newt Gingrich does not help Donald Trump as much as some other candidates. And certainly John Kasich is on the list. As somebody who could be a very good vice president with Donald Trump as the presidential nominee. But I would also say that I'm inclined to think that it's going to be either Marco Rubio or Governor Susana Martinez of New Mexico. Susana Martinez gave the best speech at the 2012 convention, and I think that she's been on the radar of a lot of people. And just because she isn't on this list, just because a lot of people don't know who she is, doesn't mean she won't be plucked out. It's not going to be Sarah Palin. It's not going to be Ben Carson. I guess it could become Joni Ernst, the senator from Iowa. But I think that there are some more important reasons to select some other people, some other rising stars.
Meanwhile, on the Democratic side, Christine, I think it was a Rasmussen poll showed that most Democrats wanted Bernie Sanders picked as Hillary Clinton's VP over Elizabeth Warren. Who do you want to see?
I want Hillary to have the opportunity to pick, and I think it will be really fascinating to see how she picks. So there are many Republicans, good friends of mine in Wausau, that are Republicans who cannot vote for Trump and who are waiting to see. If Hillary goes far left, they might not want to feel so comfortable voting for Hillary, but if she goes more center, they will. On the other hand, the Bernie supporters would much rather see her go far left. So I think she's got the wonderful thing about our party is that we've got many really talented young leaders who can come forward. So, would Elizabeth Warren be a cool pick? Yeah, but we need her in the Senate. So I think that there's a lot that goes into this, and Hillary isn't saying, and I'm standing with her. I'm going to hold and wait for her to make that decision.
Christine, come on. She's going to pick either Congressman Castro or HUD Secretary Castro. Both the brothers from San Antonio, both are talented, up-and-coming young men, and it's going to get her the Hispanic vote.
I think that that's amazing, Kevin, that you and Hillary had a conversation last night. But no, I think that that's probably not what happened.
Policy changes unveiled this week by the Obama administration would raise the annual salary threshold at which companies can deny overtime pay. It used to be $23,600 some. Now it will double to nearly $47,500. That means a fast food manager making $14 an hour or about $30,000 a year now would be eligible for overtime for extra hours. How does this sit with you, Kevin?
You know, I find this this type of position, it's not a law. Well, it will become a law because it's an executive order. It's yet one more area of activist governance by an administration that is unable to advance its policy agenda through the proper channels, which is getting Congress to commit to propose, to commit, and ultimately to vote. And it didn't happen that way. It's one more Labor Department rule, and I think it is a job killer. I was in Hartford, Connecticut, and Atlanta last week, and in two completely disparate conversations, I heard some business owners talk about how they're going to take all of their $43,000 employees and they're going to raise them to $47,500 in salary just so they don't have to comply with this rule. The problem is, by doing that, what does that say to the people who are presently making $47,500? It says that maybe they were overpaid or underpaid, or what's it really mean? And I also heard some folks say that what they're going to do is take the bonuses that they give to their employees and move it over onto the salary front so they won't have to comply with this. What good is that?
Well, brief reaction.
That gives the employers the opportunity to be flexible with the way they pay their staff. Look, since 1975, 60% of people earned overtime, now 77%. And the way they figured this out was, this has not been re-looked at since then, since 1975. So they said, we're going to take the 40th percentile of workers in the lowest salaried regions in the country, and that's how we're going to set the number for how you determine overtime. And they first put it at $50,000, and then they put it, and they were going to review it every year, and now it came back, the rule, they compromised, and they said, we'll put it at $47,500, and we'll review it every 3 years. You know, this is a real problem for the Republicans. A lot of Trump's appeal is to working class, blue collar workers who are very, very happy about this. They're very, very happy. No, they're very happy about this. Read the reports. They're saying this is restoring rights to people that work their tails off and get nothing. A lot of managers who are making just under the amount of money necessary, and now they'll at least have a chance to get overtime. This is not something that's going to hurt people. This is really going to help people. This is especially going to help women. Half of the people affected by this, 56% of them, are women, and they are either going to get a raise or they're going to get overtime protections. So I think this is great, and I think that it's about time we did something that the people really need, and this is something that really touches lives, and I credit President Obama and Secretary Perez for this. This is fantastic, and this is really going to help people.
Let me ask you, we have less than a minute to go, and I'm sorry we don't have much time, but UW-Stout became the sixth UW system campus to approve a no-confidence vote in President Ray Cross and the Board of Regents. Does this do any good, or Christine?
I think it just is a reflection of how horrible it's been for the University of Wisconsin. I credit Tommy Thompson for coming to graduation and talking about the greatest professors in the United States and what he did to save the university.
And 15 seconds, Kevin.
Well, I just think it's an overreaction, and the university's leaders need to get on board with how they can better manage their budgets and be better administrators.
Thank you both so very much for being with us, Kevin Hermaning and Christine Bremer-Moogley. Thanks to producers Bill Martins, Nyasia Ellison, and Brianne Shasso. Thanks to Kemper Moss, Ellen Clark, to Karina Abrego-Cook, and Cheryl Gasser. This is the Ideas Network.